Welcome everyone to today's Next Generation Alliance webinar on the topic of the evangelist and the local church. My name is David Jones, and along with my NGA colleagues, Jaime, Jeff, Amy, and Courtney, we think this webinar will help you build healthy church relationships. Before I introduce our presenters, a couple of quick NGA announcements. First, please mark your calendars to join us in New York City, July 9th through 11 for our NGA Extend the Impact Conference. During the conference, you will have an opportunity to pick up new ideas on innovative evangelism, connect with other evangelists, and participate in the historic Luis Palau Central Park Festival on the Great Lawn. Also, keep an eye open for two more NGA Refuel events this year, one in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, October 15. And the other will be in Atlanta, October 7 and 8. Our presenters today, get to the heart of why we're all on this call. Our presenters today are NGA evangelist Jose Zayas and Steve Jamison. Both are uniquely qualified for this webinar in that in addition to their evangelistic outreach events, they both are local church pastors. Jose began his ministry career with the Luis Palau Association and was the first director of NGA. He then went off to form his own evangelistic ministry. He is active in global evangelism, having led outreaches in the USA, United Kingdom, Europe, and Africa through Jose Zayas International. Jose is also committed to local missions, serving as the lead pastor of Sunset Jesus Church on the west side of Portland, Oregon. Our second presenter today is evangelist Steve Jamison, who has done outreach events in 37 nations on four continents. He is co-founder of Jammin' Against the Darkness Outreaches that feature NBA-style hoops tournaments, music, and a gospel message, reaching especially inner-city youth. Here in the USA, some of our most well-known venues have hosted Jammin' events, venues like Madison Square Garden, Safeco Field, and the Verizon Center. Steve is also the lead pastor of East Ridge Church in Issaquah, Washington. During our webinar today, there will be opportunity for you to ask questions of our presenters. You can send us your questions by going to the tab on the right side of your screen and just click on the questions buttons or the questions icon. Jose, Steve, welcome. And Jose, I think the plan is for you to go first.
Yeah, welcome everybody. So glad that you joined the call. And we really just want to be a resource to you. So the thought is, I'm just going to set a bit of the framework and give a bit of background on what I think, as you look at the scripture, the role of the evangelist is in connection with the local church. And then Steve's going to build on that and hopefully give you some resources for your ministry to better connect with what God's doing in each local city and church that you get a chance to serve in. So please send in those questions as we go along, and in the end, we'd be thrilled to help if we can in any way. When I think evangelist and local church, I think of my wife. I was blessed, 16 years old. I met Carmen. She was 14, absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. I fell in love. She didn't. But within a few years, she turned around, and we've been married now 21 years. And the reason why I say evangelist, local church, and my wife is because I wonder what our perspective is when we think about what our commitment ought to be locally. So when you think of your ministry, your work, your calling, and then you think about the church, what kind of picture comes to mind? To me, it's the connection in deep relationship, as deep as, if you look at the Bible, as deep as marriage. So Carmen and I, we got married, started working with Luis Palau, traveling around the country, around the world. And we've seen the highs of highs together, started an outreach ministry together 3 years ago, planted a church together. And we've also seen the lows. For 10 years, we couldn't have kids. And so I get infertility, and I get disappointment, and I've asked God why. We've seen the highs and lows of ministry, no cash, less than no cash, no cash, rough opportunities, you know, burnout, all of that. But we've kept that relationship by God's grace strong. And I love my wife today, probably more than when I first met her when I was 16. Why do I say all that? I'm not trying to waste time. I'm trying to give us a picture of what I think the scriptures speak to the evangelist and the local church. So I've got three things I've learned from Luis Palau that I'm going to throw out in just a minute. If you got a pen or you're typing, you may want to write them down. They may help. But before I do it, I just want to read a couple of verses from Ephesians, the book of Ephesians, because when you think about the local church, what is the biblical picture? How are we supposed to see it? Just a couple of verses to get us going, and then I'll give those three things I learned from Luis. First one is Ephesians 1, 22, and it says, "And God placed all things under Jesus' feet and appointed him to be the head over everything, the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way." First picture we get from Ephesians 1 is that the church is a body, it's an organism, it's a person. Ephesians 2:19. "Consequently, you're no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household." So the church is a body. The church is a household. When I say local church and I'm thinking of relationship with my wife, that is the picture you get. My wife and I are united. We're one body. We create one household. I'll give you one more. Ephesians 3:10. "God's intent was that now, through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realm." So how is God going to get his message out to heaven and earth? It's through the church. The church is the wisdom of God. Out of that relationship, that body of believers, God is going to get the gospel out. Now, forgive me for like being so elementary. You're all leaders. I'll throw one extra. Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4:11. "So Christ himself gave," and then you get the list, "the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, the teachers, to equip the body." So again, Christ creates a body. They create a household. The wisdom of God comes through that household. And as part of that, he gives gifts. So you are a central part of God's body. Now, we all know that as a framework, but how does that connect when it comes to how I see myself? How do you see yourself and your calling fitting what God's doing in the world? If God's trying to get the manifold wisdom, the gospel, out to the world, how does he use you in the local church? I'm going to throw a little kind of baseline foundation, which you probably already know, but it's good to emphasize what we already know. There's a difference between the big C, church, that is all the body of believers, and the little C, the local expression of the church. And so I just want to remind ourselves as an evangelist, yes, we're a part of the big C, like duh. We're all followers of Jesus. We all have the Holy Spirit. We're all filled with the fullness of God doing God's work. But how do we see ourselves in connection with the little C? Like the local church. Let me just be blunt. Where are you with the local church? Like, do you see that, like, the core of who you are and what you're called to do as an overflow of your connection to the body? Like, there's the big C. We're all a part of that. We know that. But do we see that our primary function as leaders, which apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, they're all just leaders in God's body. Do we see that God wants to overflow what I do starting from my connection to my local church? Like I said, three things that I've seen from Luis Palau, lived out, not just theory. Number one, love your local church. Love your local church. I've known Luis Palau for 21 years. I've had the privilege of seeing him behind closed doors, in hotels, on planes, traveling all around the world. And I will tell you this. He spends most of his time away from Cedar Mill Bible Church. That's his home church. But he loves this church. He's raised his four kids in this church. He and his wife have bled and served this church. Now, it's not the same for everybody. But for Luis, he has been part an active part of the same local church for decades. The church that sent him out on the mission field before he started his evangelistic organization, he's a part of now. Last Sunday, Luis Palau was preaching in his local church. Over the years, he served as an elder. His sons, you want to see the fruit of what he believes. His sons have been leaders in his church. His son Kevin has been an elder in the church. Andrew, who's part of the preaching team here at the Palau organization, is on the regular preaching rotation in the local church. The church helps fund the Luis Palau ministry. My point is, there is a love relationship that is so deep that I think that what God's doing around the world through Luis Palau and their team is an overflow of his love and affection for his church. Now, he understands the frailties. He's not blind. He knows the ups and downs. He's seen pastors come and pastors go. But when you think about your relationship with your local church, where is your commitment level? Where's your heart? Do you see that part of the framework of what Jesus has called you to do is to bless and serve, not just the church, because everyone says I'm part of the big C, but no, I'm a part of the little C. I think that God can increase all of our effectiveness, beginning with the foundation. And until we love the church, like I love my wife, I'll do anything for my wife. Until we see the church, God's people, as the people that we love, that we're committed to, even though we travel, even though our ministry's broad, it's out of the overflow of my commitment to my local church that actually gives me the right and the platform. So when Luis Palau speaks to pastors around the world, he's doing it with authority because he's made his commitment locally. Secondly, serve your local church. I've already said that Luis Palau, I've seen him on phone calls halfway around the world because there's an issue going on in the local church, and the pastoral team will call him up and say, hey, will you give us some feedback? Will you be praying? This has come up. That has come up. So even though he's got a global outreach, he makes room to serve his local church. They've got a new pastor there. He loves him. He's spending time with him. And although he knows the ups and downs, and he knows the baggage, and he knows some of the shortcomings, he's chosen to give deep roots into the church. So I just would encourage you, if you love your spouse, you're going to serve him, right? And that's why at the end of Ephesians 5, he can say, Christ, you know, our connection to the church should be like husband and wife. And so husbands, love your wives like Christ loves the church. And so I'm not saying minimize your global outreach. I'm not saying minimize the width and the breadth of what God's calling you to do. But I am saying that if there's no room locally, if you don't see that part of your vision and mission is to plant some roots and bless and invest. If you don't see yourself as being planted in a local church, strange things can happen. Now, I've been on both sides. So I started an evangelist organization, have a board, all of that. But I've always seen part of what I'm called to do as to be part of my local church. I've always been under the authority of my elders. So I've got a board that helps me manage the ministry. But I'm a human, and I sin a lot. And I've got a family, and I want to raise my kids to love Jesus. And so in a sense, I've got a dual connection. Yes, I'm under the authority of our elders and our local church, and I've got a management team and our board. How does that flesh out for you? You got to figure that out. But love your local church and serve your local church. Finally, then I'm going to pass it off to Steve because there's two sides. There's how I see myself in my church, and then there's how I connect with a local church that's outside of my local church. And Steve's going to help us with that. But the third thing is speak well of your church. I now lead a local church here in the Portland area. And let me tell you, it's easy to point the finger and blame. It is easy to talk about the shortcomings of other people. But if you've never led a local congregation, you have no idea what you're talking about. And I don't mean to be mean, but you have no idea the pressure from multiple angles that local churches face and local pastors struggle with. You don't have no idea how many balls you got to juggle in the air while being full of the Spirit and speaking the Word of God. So even with the shortcomings that are there, we don't throw them under the rug, but learn to speak well of your local church. And just like there's issues between you and your spouse, my wife's not perfect, I'm not perfect. Publicly, I do not speak about my wife's shortcomings. I talk about what I see in her that's beautiful and where I see Jesus and where I see her as being bright and a light to the world. So the same thing with your local church. Love it, serve it, speak well of it. And I think with that humble attitude, God will give us the grace to speak with authority wherever you go. So basically, what am I saying? No local church roots, you may limit the width, the breadth, and impact of your ministry. Deep local roots, I think God will give you experience, authority, insight, wisdom to bless the churches that you serve outside of your city. Well, again, all that's foundation, probably 99.9 you've heard before, but I hope it's a healthy reminder and the Spirit will use it. But now we're all evangelists and we're called to serve multiple churches. And so Steve not only is an amazing pastor, but has the privilege of speaking at his church in years past. And I love Steve Jamison, and he speaks with the authority of a local pastor and an evangelist. He's going to help us to think through how to better connect and position our ministries to have a deeper impact when God sends us to a city. So Steve, if you can chime in and help us out.
Hey. All right, sorry about that. Hey, welcome everybody. It's a real joy and privilege to be able to be with you today and really to partner with Jose, because we've known each other for years and I've always been impressed and always been blessed anytime I've been able to spend with Jose and really the entire Palau team. They've really played an important part in my life all the way back into 1998 when I was doing an outreach event in Washington, D.C., and they contacted me and came alongside of me and were just a tremendous help. So it's a real blessing to be able to speak to you today, and I want to just kind of piggyback in alignment with what Jose has just said to you. I want to come right back to one of the scriptures that he shared, Ephesians chapter 4. You have to excuse me. I'm going to grab my phone and just read it to you. In verse 11 and following, it says, speaking of Jesus, and he gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints and the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro, carried by every wind of doctrine and by the trickery of men in the cunningness and craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may we grow up in all things in him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth for the body and edifying itself in love. So what I'm wanting to really hit there in agreement and alignment with what Jose just shared was that as an evangelist, we have to see that we have a role. A lot of times we look at it and we say, yeah, we're the soul-winning division of the church. That's our unique gifting. That's our unique call. And that's what we really have to offer. We're able to share the gospel. We're bold. We're those crazy guys who think we could go into an arena or a church and speak for 25 minutes and then ask people to make a decision that changes everything about their lives, how they live, how they think, you know, everything about them. That's who we are. We're these bold guys. We're the evangelists. We're the soul-winning arm of the church. Well, the reality is the Bible says something different. The Bible says we have a bigger role, and that is that we've got a part to really help bring wholeness and fullness to the body of Christ. We actually have a part of the maturing process of the people of God. And I think this is something that we often overlook, and it really limits and really hinders our ministry. Because the role of an evangelist is not just to be a free agent, not just to go out and do our thing and ask other people to come help us when we have a need, but instead our job is to serve the body of Christ, and to see that, yes, we do have unique gifts, we do have a special place, but it's all for the sake of the body. And we've got to see that part of our role is to support the local leader, to support the local pastor. We can even help support him in front of his people. We can help him in the community. We, you know, Jose was just talking about speaking well of the church. I'm talking about even coming in and speaking well of the pastor. Anytime you are invited to come into a church, the first thing you need to see is that it's a unique gift. It's a blessing to be able to have the confidence of a pastor because he's responsible for his flock. He's responsible for their well-being. He's responsible for the doctrinal truth and leadership that's brought to his church. He's responsible for the leadership and the unity of that local body. And that's why evangelists, I think, have had real difficulty, is that there hasn't been enough of just bond, a partnership, where pastors feel like, wow, I want an evangelist in. You know, this year, how many evangelists can I have in my church? Because every time one comes through, the church is strengthened. Every time an evangelist comes and we partner with them, the ministry, the faith that they have, the respect that they have for leadership, it is elevated. It all goes together. We are a better church when an evangelist comes to us. So you got to ask yourself, how many times has that happened in your ministry so far? You know, and do you support the pastor? Do you support that local church? Most of us in ministry, I've had an interesting journey along the way. I've been able to serve the Lord as an evangelist, where I would, you know, have the experience of traveling across the state of Washington or the state of Oregon and doing a youth camp or doing a youth special outreach event and getting paid enough money to have gas to drive back to where I came from and maybe have a sandwich or a slice of pizza along the way. So I understand that part of developing ministry. On the other side of it, I've had the opportunity to hold citywide crusades for years and to raise the budgets, to bring leadership on board. You know, we never had big staffs. We never had big budgets. We had to go into a city and we had to find the people. We had to raise them up as volunteers and then ask and encourage churches to come alongside and even financially sponsor and bless what we were doing. And so we've been, as mentioned earlier, in places like Madison Square Garden, in the Verizon Center, Safeco Field. So these were some big events and really were used by God in some great ways. But you know, the whole point of it is that we're partnering with the local church. We use tickets to come to some of these events. The reason why we do that is we want to empower each local church. And I think this is so important. If you're doing a local church or if you're doing a community-wide thing, you have to understand every church, every pastor is concerned, yes, with their city, but honestly, more importantly, with what they're called immediately to do, and that's build that local church. So our job as evangelists is to be able to support them, to be able to look and see through the lens, not of just our own agenda, but to see through the lens of what is this pastor doing, what is this church doing, and how can we add value, how can we make it better what they're doing. And this is really an important part of all of our ministries. And when I would go into a local church, often I would preach Sunday through Wednesday. I would go in and do public schools, and then we would invite families to come out to the evening services. Did that for years. Today, I think we need to understand the church is changing. Schedules are changing. The demands on people are changing. Not only the demands, but their choices with elite teams and all the places that people have their kids in athletics, and then it's in the area of advanced music, and you know, it's all these different places that people have their kids invested, and so they're traveling. You know the story. It's one place after another. It's a full-time job just to get the kids where they're going. So a lot of churches have shifted away from bringing in outside evangelists and doing week-long events or even 3 or 4 day events, and I think we have to understand how the church is working today. I think even beyond that, we have to understand even the dynamics of the churches that we're partnering with, because there's a huge difference. Tim Keller, the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian in New York, has said that the difference between pastoring a church of 400 people and pastoring a church of 2,000 people is a bigger difference than if you were to switch denominations. So there's a big difference in the sizes of churches and how they operate. And so in order to be effective in today's evangelistic world, you and I have to understand the dynamics. Smaller churches, there's smaller opportunities, but there's still great opportunities. A smaller church has more flexibility. Smaller church usually doesn't plan as far out or have the restrictions of a mid-sized to a larger church. Just think about it in this term. Every segment going from a small church to a mid-sized church to a large church and then off to a mega church, with every different status that we talk about, the planning gets deeper, the planning gets longer. Smaller church, it's like a speedboat. They can make a tighter turn, they can make adjustments, they can do what they want to do. A large church, particularly a mega church, it's like an ocean liner. It's like an oil tanker that takes 5 miles to stop because it's got so much momentum. And we have to understand that. In order to get the attention of a larger church, you have to stop looking at it as what they can do for you, and you've got to start looking at it and saying, what can we do to add value? And there has to be an understanding of how churches are operating today. They're operating under tighter budgets. They're operating under schedules that are planned further out. A church like ours, we run about 2,400 people on a weekend. We're planning a year and a half out with longer-term events, even 2 years out. And you have to understand that that's how they're planning. I work with a lot of different groups, MBA players, different people, and it's a real shock to some of these people to realize how far out churches are planning. And you've got to get on their schedule. You've got to have relationship. Here's the key. All quality ministry flows out of relationship, and it's particularly true when you want to come and partner and serve with the local church. You know, Jose was talking about honoring the church, speaking well of the church. The other part of it is having real relationship with the church. I think that's why it's important for you to base out of a church, for you to be known in a church. I think the highest recommendation that you should ever receive is what you get from the church where you actually attend, that pastor. A lot of people overlook that, but boy, there's amazing doors that come because you have credibility. How do you get credibility in a church today? There's only one way. It's relationship. It's somebody either knows you or they know somebody who has already had you minister with them, and it's word of mouth. I mean, there's not a whole lot of evangelists that are getting a whole lot of positions or a whole lot of opportunities because you've advertised somewhere. It's word of mouth. It's the quality of your life. It's people knowing your integrity, knowing that you deliver on what you say. You live what you say you believe. So when we look at our role in the church and we realize, you know what, we're more than just that one narrow little piece. We're more than just the soul-winning arm of the church. We have a part of the maturing of the saints. It's one of the reasons why one of the big lessons I learned from Luis Palau, what I learned from Billy Graham team, is that when they come into a city, they always specialize in teaching, training, and equipping the local churches. They bring in friendship evangelism. They talk about how you can be a part of your local church, how you can serve. They talk about how your skills and your talents can be used. They teach you to honor, even tithe and give to your church. You know what? When pastors see that you're there to build the church, you're there to support their work, that what they're doing is enhanced because you're there, then they're going to want you there. They're going to hire you. They're going to bring you back year after year. And so here's the other thing I think is really important for us to see. Today's world is streamlined. All of the churches, Simple Church is a big book on the market for churches today. And it's all about how can we simplify our schedule? How can we pare down all the meetings and all the different places that we're asking people to go and to be involved with? We're streamlining our weekly schedules. I mean, even though there's a million different points of ministry, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to streamline the pathway. What do we want somebody to do when they come through the door of the church? How do we want to disciple them, connect with them? How do we want them to serve? We're trying to talk about flow charts today. We're talking about job descriptions that are one or two paragraphs long. That's what we're talking about inside the church. How can we empower people, give them bite-sized roles, bite-sized pieces that they could serve and they could grow? So as an evangelist, I think the key to success is to see the local church for what it is. The local church is the bride of Christ. It's his pride and joy. And our job is to serve and to equip and to empower that local church. We're to partner with the pastors. You can have a unique place. When I was on the road traveling, I always saw half of my job as just being supportive to the pastor. A lot of times they'll take you into a place of confidence and they'll tell you what they're struggling with, the things that they're having difficulty with. There were so many times when a pastor would say to me at a larger church, hey, I've got difficulty. I've got a, you know, a youth pastor or a children's pastor, a worship pastor that really doesn't understand teamwork or doesn't understand unity or doesn't understand authority. How about if you go to lunch with them or go to dinner with them and just plant some seeds into their lives? I've had pastors say, hey, can you come and talk to my board about unity? So if you see yourself as serving the local church, then the local church is going to open up the door for you. If you understand the planning, if you understand the schedule challenges that the local church is facing, then you can address that. You can speak to that. You can say to a pastor, hey, I understand the demands that are on you budget-wise. I understand the schedule demands that are upon you. And then talk about what you do have to offer. Think through the lens of the local church having 52 weeks to minister. They have 52 opportunities. They have a set budget over 12 months. How can you come in and enhance those 52 weeks? How can you enhance the bang for the buck, so to speak, in the budget for 52 weeks? How can you partner with what they're already doing and make it even better? You know, do you have a ministry that you could partner with young couples? I'll just tell you this, pastors all over the place are looking for people that can come in and help them do marriage ministry. Come in with some comedy. Come in with some great teaching. You know, there's always an open door to come in and to partner with youth ministry and how you can enhance. If you're skateboard, if you do basketball, whatever it is, music, there's incredible opportunities. But you've got to see, you got to stop looking for the church to come do your event and for your event to be a tool in the tool bag of the church. Whether it's citywide, when we were going to an arena, we wanted to do tickets. And we would ask churches to sponsor blocks of seats. And instead of just saying, hey, can you take an offering? Can you bless what we're doing? We're saying, hey, this ticket is a tool. This ticket is an invitation tool for your church. It's a way that you can make this event. Your people bring your friends. Your people even sit together. Your people even walk and help lead each other, others' friends to the Lord. And when you're driving home or you get to the church, you even help with follow-up. So it's an incredible place. And I think it all comes down to, do we understand how the church is really functioning today? Do we understand our role? And I would say this as well. We need evangelists more than we've ever needed them. Our country is in a downward spiral. Our world has incredible needs. And I would just say this, we need that evangelistic arm more than ever. And it's tough right now, and I know it's tough. It's hard to get into churches. It's hard to even get a pastor on the phone, and I know that. And what I'm saying to you is know who you are, know what your unique gifts are, see through the lens of what the church needs, and then show the pastors in quality, you know, printed materials, get a quality website, and then get some good endorsements. Send a pastor a link with just even 5 to 6 minutes on a video where you have two or three pastors that you've ministered with who can just say a quick endorsement to you. They can say something like, hey, you know what, we were working to try and do outreach with our youth, and or we were trying to do young couples, or we were trying to do all church, and this person was able to come in and this is what they did for us. And boy, did it make a difference for our church. If you can get just two or three endorsements, you know, you don't need to try and, you know, brag on yourself or overdo it. Just speak the truth, have quality programs, give opportunities, give even a drop-down menu of some of the things that you could do while you're in a local church. I would offer them everything from I can do a seminar during the day for people who can come, parents, whatever. I'll do a parenting seminar during the day in between school assemblies. I'll speak to your board. You can have a dinner for your board before our main services. Just offer yourself. When you really understand the church and you come to bless them, you come to serve them, you're going to find they're going to love you, they're going to talk well about you, and they're going to open up amazing doors, and God will take you places that otherwise you would never be able to go. So the church is really the bride of Christ, and it is the engine of all ministry. And if we can really get that into our heart, you'll see amazing things in your ministry. So I'm ready, Jose, for you and any questions you guys want to bring to us.
Thanks, Steve. Dave Jones here again. Special thanks to Jose and you. First question, what specifics can we evangelists do to support, encourage, and serve our local church pastor?
I'll give a couple of things because I've done, like Steve, both. I've been full-time traveling and now leading a church while traveling. Offer yourselves humbly. So if, you know, you're a quality speaker or whatever you do and you can serve the church, what I offered with every church wherever we live and we're a part of is, hey, I would love to come in. And if I can give you a break at a time that makes sense for you, and whether it's talk about evangelism or if you're in a teaching series, I would love to join you in that series and maybe plan together and study together, anything that's going to bring a strong relational tie that says, like, I'm not asking for anything because we raise support for our ministry. Like, I'm not asking for an offering. I'm not asking to get names from the church on our list. I just love you. I love what God's doing here. And I want to see our church grow. Second thing would be training, because like Steve said, equipping is the heart of long-term impact. So we do the outreaches, we share the gospel, but Ephesians 4, we equip people to do ongoing work. That's the role of the evangelist. So in the churches that I've been a part of before leading one, is saying, what can I do? If you're doing a teaching series, if you're doing a class, whatever, can I do a seminar? I want to see everyone in our church bring more people who don't know Jesus to church. That's scratching where a pastor itches. They want to see more people mobilized. But as an evangelist, you have that gift. It's just humbly saying, whatever works for you, and I'll make myself available. And I have not been turned down at every church that my wife and I have been a part of in the cities we've lived. I've always been on the teaching team in our church. Non-paid. Not throwing a bone about what we do outside, but it's just part of who we are.
Yeah, and I would just jump in there with that too, Jose, and that is that when we have people in our church who are quality evangelists and people that are serving, we want to bless them. We open up office space. We, you know, financially get behind them. I think there's a lot of pastors. It's all about relationship. If it's all just a taking relationship, that's never going to win. All quality ministry flows out of relationship. And here's the other thing I would say is that I was talking about before I had my little technical glitch, so I apologize for that. But I would say this, pastors are looking for quality evangelists. Yeah. I have people ask me all the time, okay, do you even know some quality evangelists? And, you know, I think about Jose, I think about, you know, Andrew Palau and Luis and these guys. But I'll just say this, pastors would love to know five guys who would be in their toolkit that they could say, hey, man, if I need a marriage person, if I want an all-church event, if I want a youth event, these are guys who are going to bless us. We've got confidence in them because they're going to come prepared. They're going to do a great job preaching the word, but they're also going to strengthen us. They're going to back us up. They're going to lift up the church. They're not going to be in there bad-mouthing. There's nothing worse than being on a platform and having the guy speak and be talking bad about the church or pastors that are off the rails. And you're sitting there going, gee, why did I bring this guy in to talk? You know, you want somebody that's positive. You want somebody speaking the word of God. You want somebody who can equip your people. And you're going to find doors will open for you.
And on that note, you get that first opportunity. George Whitfield, I read his autobiography. A biography about him years ago. And Whitfield's model was to preach and return. So he started in Boston, a few other cities, and then he returned, and then the network went out, and then he returned, and the network got broader. Before you knew it, he was preaching all up and down the East Coast when it was still a colony. So if you serve that church well, they will want you back, and or they're going to be in a pastor's meeting and talk about, man, it was so good to have whoever you are in, and we were strengthened. They're going to be your best friend. So serve that church well and don't see it as a one-off. see if there's a chance that you can come back and over the years have an investment in maybe fewer churches, but over time build in deep. Not only will you bless that church, but they'll be your advocate. It's better than a PR campaign because those don't work.
Yeah, and if I could jump in there with you on that, Jose, the other thing I would say about that is even invite people to go with you out of these churches. If you do overseas ministry, invite a pastor or invite some of their people to go with you. You ask him first if that's okay. But if you develop those kind of partnerships and relationships, we do it in our church. We call them strategic partners, and they're people we support every year. We want to go places with them. We just want to, you know, build ministry with them. And you're exactly right. When I traveled 15 years full-time, I think there may have been one church that I did not go back to over the course of that time. I had one church that had me 11 years in a row, and I was like, man, you guys must be bored. Can't you find somebody else?
Isn't that good, Steve?
You know, that's the kind of relationships that you can build, you know?
Yeah. But hear what Steve just said, that he was brought back again and again and again. Out of the overflow of relationship, great things happen. So I was with, I mean, Steve won't tell you, but I was with Steve in D.C. and other places, and he had and has the heart of the pastor because he actually cares about them and cares about their life and cares about their ministry. And if that is truly in your soul, that's like the foundation. I'm here to help grow God's kingdom by blessing the church. It will show in the way you speak and the way you serve,
yeah.
And you'll get the repeat invite. And, I mean, that's Luis's story. He's gone again and again and again to multiple places, and the networks just get bigger, and now it's, you know, ginormous, if I can use a non-English word.
Here's a follow-up question. I think you've touched on some of this, but the participant is asking, what are some of the practical things we can do to establish relationships with pastors other than our home church, our local church pastor?
Well, I think the best thing is most of you are probably affiliated either with an organization or with a denomination. And, you know, one of the things to do is to build into your schedule. Look for the opportunities where they're going to meet, go to conferences, go to some of those places. But also just realize if you go into a place and you have a strong week of ministry with somebody or strong even weekend, because a lot of ministry today is focused on weekends, ask that pastor if he could connect you with five quality friends who he would not only say, hey, here's somebody you ought to go talk to, but ask that pastor to make five phone calls for you, followed up with, you know, five emails to those guys. And just, because here's the deal, people do not have a list of guys they trust. It just doesn't exist. If you can get a guy to call five people, doors are going to open. You just do that every time you go somewhere, and guys are willing to do it. And you just build your connections.
This sounds small and very old school, but old school sometimes works. If there was a strong connection with you there that weekend, a handwritten note that just said, not asking for anything, you know, but something specific. While I was at your church, this is what I saw. Man, I'm just so thrilled to serve with you, leaving a good taste in the mouth. So what happens after the event? If you just move on to the other one and forget about what happened, you could miss out on that multiplying opportunity that Steve was talking about. So get it in your filtered system of, when I leave, what's going to be the last taste? Like in a great restaurant, it's the last taste that matters.
That's good.
Whether it's the dessert or the last bite. So what am I intentionally going to do to leave a mark of blessing? I've in the past have sent flowers to that assistant that really helped me out. Thank you notes to a few people that I met along the way. And that personal touch, Luis Palau still does that. You know, he gets it on his recorder or whatever and makes notes to his assistant who sends out all of these notes. And it may seem old school in the e-world, but when you get that personal touch, it does leave a good mark. Anyway.
Okay, it's in several participants have asked this question. How can we elevate the office of the evangelist in a local church and reestablish the credibility of the evangelist?
Nice loaded question.
Yeah. But there's only one way. There's only one way to build credibility, and that is action. That's just flat out living up to setting the standard. And you know, today the bar is low. There's no doubt about it. The opportunities are low. The bar is low, but the need is high. And if I could speak anything to our group today, it's a big thank you to Luis Palau and to the team for even having this kind of a forum, and not only this forum, but the alliance and just the desire to raise up new leaders and to really be a place that could be a catalyst of a new season. And so I would just say, even like with what Jose was just talking about, honoring the pastor, saying thank you, one of the other big things is when you come into a church, find things that they're doing really well, and then get up and brag about that church. Brag about the pastor. You know, your church has a huge vision. I've come here today, and I see the passion. I see their heart. What a privilege it is to be able to come in and partner with them. I'll tell you what, you just lifted your opportunities right along with lifting the pastor you're working with. And there's just no way. If you come in to bless, and that's really your agenda, and you want to bless that church, you're going to help raise the bar. Like I said, if you're blessing the local church, they're going to want you. Word of mouth is the greatest tool that you could possibly have. And if you just come in and you're not arrogant, but you're just an incredibly nice guy and you come well prepared, when you get up and preach, it's obvious you've been in the presence of God, because you can't lead anybody where you're not. And pastors are going to be the first ones to see that. And you know, they're looking for people who are humble, coming in with a servant's heart, willing to roll up your sleeves and get a little dirty, not be a prima donna, but really come in and serve the church. I'm just saying, there's an open door today for quality people, and that's how you change the whole tone.
Well, you know, even Luis Palau, in between the big things he's doing, is preaching evangelistic events in local churches and seeing massive fruit, to verify what Steve is talking about. So a couple of things. There has been a cultural shift, whereas, you know, 50 years ago when Billy Graham was in the highlight of his ministry, he was the voice everyone was looking to. So if you said you're an evangelist and people are thinking Billy Graham, like, you're a stand-up guy, well, the culture has changed. And if anything, people are looking more to local church pastors as the visionary leaders for the Jesus movement in the U.S. But that is okay. You just need to know there are plenty of ministries that are honoring Jesus, doing evangelistic work, and helping to set the tone for the next generation. So we don't see it all, but I know a lot of the guys in the NGA, and there are a lot of people, men and women, making a kingdom impact and paving the way of quality, Jesus-centered, humble ministry that you can build on, but you have to build. When I first started, Luis Palau said this, and I found it to be true. Jose, I can open the door for you, but you have to walk in it.
Yeah.
And hear that. God will open a door for you. A friend, a pastor, another evangelist will open the door. How do you gain that spirit of credibility? It's by action. And when you serve in a Jesus-like way and do your part, no more, no less, it's going to slowly build that brick on brick of a foundation. So the days aren't as great as the glory days of, you know, Graham or whatever, but these are the best days. So build where Jesus opens the door.
I think we've got to really understand the dynamic, like you're talking about, Jose, and it's the compression of the schedule, where it used to be week-long, 2-3-week crusades. Now it's, what is the church doing on a weekend? So we got to understand, you got to come in and be able to really bring bang for the buck into a weekend and make a difference. Go, instead of fighting against where the church is, go with it. Why is it that more pastors, I do this myself, you invite other pastors to come in and speak key events more than you do even outside evangelists? The reason for that is because if you're a pastor of a mega church, most likely you're going to go bring in a pastor of another mega church to come in and speak, because that guy knows the pain you've gone through. That guy knows the demands. That guy knows the pressure. And he's going to be there just to add value. You're not going to have some guy that's got his own orbit, his own agenda. And that's why there's a diminishing door, there has been, for evangelists. But you got to see the days are also flipping back and changing again with ISIS, with fear, with the things that are happening. We're seeing our country go in a wrong direction. This is the open door for the evangelist. Seize the moment. Come in through relationship. Come in ready. And prepare yourself. Get excited. Don't have a negative view of where you are, what's happening, because the days of evangelism are coming back, and they're coming quickly.
Here's a question on that the last topic. A couple of the participants who do citywide outreaches are asking, why is it so difficult to mobilize churches for citywide outreaches? Do they not see value in what we do?
I hate to hog the airway here for a second, Jose. I'll try to be brief. I just think there's got to be bigger vision. I think when you do citywide, you've got to be able to go to the pastors and you've got to show them how this is going to become their event. You know, how can they benefit from being a part of something that's going to touch the community? The other thing I think is people are ready right now. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety of what is going to be next on the world scene and even in our own declining culture. So if you come in and you start casting the vision, you know what? What America needs today is we need to start to bring Christ into the marketplace. We need to bring more highly visible, really quality, positive events into the market square. And here's how we're able to do that. I think you're going to see doors open again. Yeah. It really is a time where America needs public Christianity. If we don't rise up and start bringing Christ into the public square again in a positive way, then we're really missing the days of opportunity in our country and the need that's in our country.
I think on the citywide level, too, is we get excited about the event because that hits with our primary calls to proclaim. But local leaders are interested in the process. So if you're doing citywide, what are the things that are going to be the long-term value after you're gone, and what are the things that are going to really scratch where people are itching leading up to it? So those pre-meeting things, how are the pastors going to be able to be coordinated better together? What's the area-wide prayer? How's that going to be lifted? Everyone wants to see the city prayed over and prayer, which goes well beyond the event, stirred up. What training is going to happen beforehand? If we just emphasize what we're going to do, most pastors, events happen at minimum every 7 days.
Yeah.
But for many, it's twice in a week. It's every 3 to 4 days. So, lack of a sales pitch, but don't so much sell the event as how it's going to raise the temperature of what Jesus is doing well past the event, and how you're going to be able to use the event as one of your tools to reach more people. So there's still a day for them, but it is a more complicated day.
We can't have an NGA webinar without some questions on money. Every year when we survey our members, what's your number one critical concern? Money's always at the top of the list. We probably don't even need to do the survey anymore. We just know every year the number one answer is going to be money. So we got a couple questions related to money. The first one is, how do we respond to a church that invites us when they ask us, what is our fee?
Yeah. I can just give you mine real quickly. Determine a philosophy of ministry and stick with it. So I patterned our plan after Luis Palau's, and so we have a team of individuals, mostly some churches, some foundations that support the work. So if I'm coming in, I'm just saying, like, hey, I don't have a fee. I don't have a fee structure. I'm here to serve. This is what we long to do. I'm going to do my 100% best, and I know and trust that you're going to do your 100% best. And so, but not everyone can run off of that. It depends on what your philosophy of ministry is, and there's many. So going into a church, I've never looked at that as a need for us to continue fueling forward. And because of that, have been a little more freed up. So we have individuals supporting us to be able to go do that work without any expectation. If you can't do that, then you just have to work within your system. As much as you can get partners with you to support what you do and bring that consistency so you're not preaching for the paycheck, the more you'll minimize the temptation and the stress level. But Steve, there are multiple approaches. What have you done?
Yeah. I think that, first of all, pastors want to hear that your heart is there to serve. And we all understand it takes money. So again, you got to realize what size of church are you working with. And I would say this to you, don't be afraid to trust God at a small church. Some of the biggest offerings that I got were at a smaller church where you just would not expect it at all. And then I've gone into mega churches where you're thinking, wow, these guys could really help me. And they don't. And you could just walk away really discouraged. I mean, so it's either way. I think that the whole key is to be up front. And, you know, what we would always say is, you know what, we go to all sizes of churches. We go to small, medium, and large, and we trust God in every situation. And so there's only one thing that we ask, and that's that you would do your very best. And our commitment, just like Jose just said, our commitment is we want you to know we commit ourselves to bringing our very best into your church. And if you'll just do your best, we'll trust God. We believe God for that. And then be really clear on the other things. You know, get in writing. Okay, they're going to do a love offering for me, or they're going to do an honorarium. You know, I think it's good for you to ask them and say, so how would you like to proceed? Ask that question to the pastor. What are you guys most comfortable with? Do you prefer to take an offering, or do you prefer an honorarium? How do you like to work in this situation? And so that's what I would do. I think that's a God-honoring thing. You're even talking to them as an authority, and you're honoring them. I'd always call them pastor, even though I may know these guys. You know, I'll say, hey, pastor, how would you like to handle this? What would you think would be the best for your church? And when you put it in those terms, usually people are more generous than if you're saying, well, I need X amount of dollars or we don't come, and, you know, I got my entourage and all this. Those days just don't fly very well anymore.
Okay, our second money question, I think it's more a comment for you to react to. It's frustrating for us when we see our home church financially supporting people and activities that are not missional, and they don't see what we do as evangelists in reaching the lost as worthy of support.
I'm going to be mean in Christian love. The question, the way it's phrased, shows something in the heart. We're servants of Jesus, and we're called by Jesus to do the Jesus work. So Matthew 7:1 is real clear. Be careful when you judge. So maybe find out what those other ministries are and why is it that that's a passion for the church. And then present lovingly why what you're doing is in line with the overall vision of the church. As long as we're like, why, them. That's an uphill battle. So I hate to be mean, but love you.
Yeah, I think it's all about relationship again. You just can't get away from that. It's all about relationship. And, you know, sometimes we can be frustrated by what we see and even how we feel or react to a moment. Don't let that moment rob you. Take the next step. You know, I was with a pastor. I was in a church. And we had a new pastor come in. And so I went in and I said, hey, I'd love to meet with you. I got on the schedule. And when I got in there, I sat down across from him and his chair and his desk. And he says, why as an evangelist do you want to even base in the church? And before I could answer, he said, I know why you're here. It's because you want money. And I said, well, you know, actually, our family's based in this church. We've been here before you came. You know, you're the new guy. But what I said to him was, you know, look at it this way. We're here, and what God's called us to do is to love the church, support the church, and build the church. So if I was just off on my own out preaching on the street corner and I won somebody to the Lord, I might say, okay, I'm here for 3 more days, so come meet with me. I'll tell you everything I know about Jesus. But on the 4th day, I'm going to Alaska to preach or California. So, hey, I hope you can make it. Do the best that you can. I said, my job as an evangelist is to build the church and to take somebody that we're able to minister to and help plug them into the body. And him just hearing that from me turned his whole opinion. And, you know, he ended up being somebody who sponsored us monthly, you know, opened the door. I would preach in that church with him. And it was all about just, you know, loving them enough and sitting down. I would suggest take your pastor to lunch, take him out golfing, do something that shows relationship with him, and then say, you know, I'd like to just share with you a little bit bigger picture of what we're doing and how we're even looking for some strategic partnerships, churches that can help help us build this ministry, and I'd love for you to consider maybe our home church being one of those strategic partners. You frame it right, you come in the right way, give a good presentation, be well prepared, and truly come in a spirit of what you want to see your relationship be, and I think God will help you.
Great.
Otherwise, go to a different church.
Hey, go to Steve's church, move to Instagram.
One final question before we close, guys, and this has been excellent, thank you. How can we evangelists help local churches equip Christ followers to be effective witnesses?
Go ahead, Jose.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on your calling. Because this is our specialty, I would encourage you to be a specialist. Be super aware. Bring value. Because the pastor is hitting on so many areas of discipleship to Jesus. They're not just thinking how to get people in. It's how to grow people, how to care for people, how to rebuke and shift where people's thinking has been off. So there's so many, you know, they're more generalist. So add value. What is it that you can bring to the church that's going to awaken people to the thing they can't get otherwise? So do like Luis Palau has done. Be a lifelong reader. Be really up. Don't bring last decade's seminar. Know the newest info. And if you add that value, a leader is going to want you in their toolbox, so to speak. They're going to see you as the guy who brings something that's going to be of help to them, and they can trust that you're going to push people along in the same direction. But it depends on what you're called to do. But whatever you do, do it well. Like, aim to be the best, not to beat people, but to add that value that a church says, I need them back. Like, I want you back because you pushed us forward.
This has been great, gentlemen. We've got a few more questions, but unfortunately, we're out of time. Jose, Steve, again, thank you for today, and we want to thank all of our participants for joining this webinar. All of our webinars are included on the NGA website resource page. If you haven't visited the website recently, please do so. You'll find a lot of great resources there, information on NGA members, as well as opportunities for ministry collaboration. The website, again, is nextgenerationalliance.org, nextgenerationalliance.org, one word. We do look forward to seeing you July 9 to 11 in New York City. And there are, as we mentioned at the top of the broadcast, we do have two more refuels this year. Both are in October. One will be in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and the other in Atlanta, Georgia. And coming up May 21 at 9 a.m., Dr. Jim Williams is going to be doing a webinar on the most contagious of all sins, bitterness. And Dr. Williams is just an outstanding man of God, a great communicator. You don't want to miss his May 21 webinar. Again, thank you for joining us today. Thanks to our presenters. Speak well of your local church. Thank you, everyone.